A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been refining his permanent marking system for a while now, and he's landed on a process he calls his gold standard. Engrave the surface first to cut a physical recess. Fill that recess with an oil-based industrial paint marker. Let it dry. The engraving gives you a fallback if the paint fails, and the paint itself is UV-resistant and waterproof. It's already a hardy system, but his question today is about the next layer up. For the most unforgiving environments, he wants to know about adding a sacrificial coating on top, a protective film that takes the beating so the mark underneath doesn't have to. And he's asking for the practical breakdown. Application method, cost, and what surfaces each material suits best.
This is the right question to ask after you've built a two-layer system, because the engraving plus paint marker approach works for a reason. The engraving removes material, so even if every molecule of paint vanishes, the identifier is still physically cut into the substrate. You can read it by shadow. The paint marker fills that recess with pigment suspended in an oil-based resin that cures hard and shrugs off water and UV. Two independent failure modes. If the paint fails, the engraving survives. If the engraving somehow gets abraded away, you've got bigger problems than your label. Adding a third layer changes the logic entirely. Now you're not making the mark invulnerable. You're adding a consumable shield.
Which is what sacrificial actually means here. The coating is designed to fail first. It absorbs the UV, the abrasion, the chemical exposure, the salt spray. It degrades so the mark doesn't. And when it's gone, you don't remark. You recoat. That's the whole maintenance model in one sentence.
And it matters because there are environments where the two-layer system isn't enough. Marine settings where salt and sun work in shifts. Industrial floors where forklifts roll over the mark 40 times a day. Mining equipment that lives in abrasive dust. Agricultural machinery coated in fertilizer and pesticide residue. Anywhere the mark faces continuous insult rather than occasional exposure. That's where the coating earns its keep.
So today we're walking through the materials that sit on top of the mark and take the beating so the mark doesn't have to. Four families. Wax-based coatings, silicone conformal coatings, spar varnishes, and urethanes, and two-part epoxies. Each one has a different relationship with failure, and that's the interesting part.
Start with wax, because it's the oldest and it's the one people underestimate. Microcrystalline wax, or carnauba, dissolved in a solvent. You wipe it on or spray it, the solvent flashes off, and you're left with a hard, slick film. The key is multiple thin coats, and burnishing between coats if you want real adhesion. Wax is cheap. Consumer products run $15 to $30 a tin. Industrial formulations cost more, but per square foot, it's still the most economical option by a wide margin.
And the catch is, it's only economical if you're willing to reapply it. Wax is a temporary coating by design. It's perfect for moderate abrasion, semi-permanent marking, situations where you know you'll be removing or changing the mark eventually. But it needs a non-porous surface to key into. Metal, plastic, sealed stone. Put it on something porous or friable and it just sits on top, waiting to flake off.
The adhesion physics matter here. Wax doesn't form chemical bonds with the substrate. It forms a mechanical bond. It fills the microscopic texture of the surface and locks in. On a polished surface with no texture, it has nothing to grab. On a rough surface, it keys in beautifully. That's why surface preparation is half the battle with wax. You're not cleaning the surface so the wax sticks. You're creating the texture the wax needs to hold on to.
So, wax is the low-tech option. But the moment you need real chemical resistance, you move to silicone conformal coatings. And this is where the chemistry gets interesting.
Silicone resins cure at room temperature through either moisture or addition cure. The result is a flexible hydrophobic film. Water beads up and rolls off. The flexibility is the key property, because it means the coating can expand and contract with the substrate. If your marked surface flexes, the silicone flexes with it. A rigid coating would crack and let moisture in through the cracks. Silicone doesn't have that problem. Application is brush, spray, or dip. Some formulations are solvent-borne, others are 100% solids, which matters for compatibility, and we'll get to that. Cost is mid-range. $30 to $80 a quart for industrial grades with coverage around 200 to 400 square feet per gallon, depending on how thick you apply it.
And the surfaces it likes are electronics, metals, many plastics. It's the standard choice for circuit boards that need to survive humidity and salt spray. But it's finicky about contamination. If the surface has oil or release agents on it, the silicone won't bond properly. You get delamination. And delamination is the worst failure pattern for any coating, because it can take the underlying paint with it.
That's the adhesive failure problem. A coating that peels off cleanly is doing its job badly. A coating that peels off and pulls the paint marker with, it's worse than no coating at all. You've now destroyed the very mark you were trying to protect. So surface prep before silicone is non-negotiable. Degrease, abrade lightly if the surface allows, clean again. The coating has to bond to the substrate, not just sit on top of the paint.
From silicone, we move to the classic marine finishes. Spar varnish versus spar urethane. This is a debate that's been running in boatyards for decades.
And it's a real trade-off, not a marketing distinction. Traditional spar varnish is phenolic or alkyd-based. It's relatively soft and flexible. That softness means it can absorb impact and flex without cracking. When it does get damaged, it's easy to repair. You sand the damaged area and recoat. The downside is, it's not as UV resistant as modern formulations and it needs more frequent maintenance. Spar urethane is polyurethane modified. Harder, more UV resistant, more abrasion resistant. But that hardness comes at a cost. Under repeated flexing, it can crack. And once a hard coating cracks, moisture gets underneath and starts working on the wood or the paint. Repair is more involved because you can't just spot sand a hard urethane, the way you can a soft varnish.
Cost is $20 to $50 a quart for both. Application is brush or spray, multiple coats, sanding between coats. Wood is the classic substrate, obviously. Marine signage, boat trim, anything that lives outdoors and flexes. But both can be used on properly primed metal and some plastics. The primer is doing the work of creating a surface the varnish can bond to.
The flexibility question is the thing most people get wrong. They assume harder is better. But a coating that's harder than the substrate is a liability. The substrate flexes, the coating doesn't, and you get cracks. A coating should be slightly more flexible than whatever it's protecting. That's why spar varnish remains the choice for wooden signage that's going to expand and contract with humidity. The urethane is for when you need abrasion resistance more than you need flex.
And finally, the nuclear option. Two-part epoxies.
Two-part epoxy is a different category entirely. You mix resin and hardener, and a chemical reaction cross links the whole thing into a rigid, chemically resistant film. It's the hardest and most chemically resistant option in the lineup. Application is mix, then brush, roller, or spray within the pot life. Once it starts to cure, you can't stop it. You need a primer on most surfaces, in multiple coats, for full protection. Cost is $50 to $150 a gallon for industrial grades. Surface suitability is excellent on metals, concrete, and rigid plastics. Poor on flexible substrates because it'll crack. This is the coating for extreme chemical exposure, high abrasion industrial floors, permanent installations where you never want to think about the mark again.
The pot life is the part that catches people. You mix the two parts and you have a limited window before the stuff turns solid in the can. 20 minutes to an hour depending on formulation and temperature. If you're coating a single engraved tag, you're mixing way more epoxy than you need and throwing most of it away. That's fine for an industrial facility with 100 tags to do. It's wasteful for a home project.
And that's the first hint of the real question, which is whether the coating is worth it at all, because the material cost is only one part of the equation. The labor is the rest. But we should talk about the materials a bit more before we get to the trade-offs. The chemistry of epoxy adhesion is worth understanding. Epoxy forms actual chemical bonds with the substrate, not just mechanical ones. That's why it's so hard to remove once it's cured. It also means surface preparation is even more critical. Any contamination gets locked into the bond line and becomes a weak point. You're not just cleaning the surface. You're creating the chemical conditions for the epoxy to grab onto.
Now that we've covered the materials, let's talk about what happens when you actually deploy them. The knock-on effect and trade-offs, because the material choice is the easy part. The hard part is understanding what adding a coating does to your maintenance model.
The biggest shift is this. Without a coating, when the mark fails, you remark. That's skilled labor. You need someone who can operate the engraver, apply the paint marker cleanly, get the identifier right. With a coating, when the coating fails, you recoat. That's semi-skilled labor. Wipe on a new layer of wax, brush on a new coat of varnish, anyone can be trained to do it in an afternoon. For large inventories, that's a significant operational advantage. You're not paying skilled labor to redo the same mark every 6 months. You're paying semi-skilled labor to maintain a protective layer.
But there's a flip side. A coating that fails adhesively can take the underlying paint with it. We mentioned this with silicone, but it applies across the board. If the coating peels, and the paint marker is bonded to the coating better than it's bonded to the substrate, the paint comes off with the coating. Now you've got a bare engraving and no paint. The engraving still works as a fallback, which is why the two-layer system is so robust, but you've lost the high-contrast readability that the paint provides, so surface preparation becomes critical. The coating has to bond to the substrate, not just sit on top of the paint.
And then there's the compatibility problem. This is the real-world gotcha that catches people. Not all coatings play well with all paint markers. Solvent-borne coatings can dissolve the oil-based paint marker underneath. The solvent in the coating re-wets the paint and you get smearing, running, or complete removal. You apply the coating to protect the mark and the coating destroys the mark. Waterborne or 100% solids formulations are safer over oil-based paint markers. No solvent, no re-wetting. But you have to check the chemistry before you apply anything. The coating datasheet will tell you what solvents it contains. If it's got xylene or toluene or MEK in it, keep it away from your paint marker.
That's the kind of detail that sounds obvious once you know it, but it's exactly the kind of thing that ruins a project. You've engraved the tag, you've painted the identifier, you've let it dry for a day, everything looks perfect. Then you brush on a solvent-borne varnish and watch the paint dissolve in real time. The mark is ruined, and you got to strip the coating off and start over.
The cost per square foot analysis is where this all lands. Wax coatings are cheapest per application. $15 to $30 a tin, and a tin goes a long way, but you're reapplying every few months in a harsh environment. Epoxies are most expensive up front, $50 to $150 a gallon, but they last years. The true cost is labor over time, not material cost per gallon. A cheap wax that needs quarterly reapplication might cost more in labor over 5 years than an epoxy that you apply once and forget about, or it might not if you've got cheap labor and expensive downtime. The math depends entirely on your situation.
That's the decision framework Daniel's really asking about. For high-value assets in extreme environments, the three-step process is justified. Engrave, paint, coat. The cost of a failed mark is high. If a valve tag on a chemical processing line becomes unreadable, someone has to trace the line back to the source to identify what it carries. That's expensive. The coating is cheap insurance. For lower value or short life items, the coating step is overkill. A garden sign that you'll replace in 3 years doesn't need an epoxy coating. The paint marker alone will last that long. The decision hinges on the cost of a failed mark versus the cost of the coating.
There's a mining company case study that illustrates this perfectly. They were using bare paint markers on engraved tags for their underground equipment. The dust and abrasion were eating the paint in a matter of months. They switched to epoxy-coated engraved tags and the remarking labor dropped by 80%. The epoxy didn't eliminate the need to remark entirely. Eventually, the coating fails and the paint fails and you have to redo the whole thing. But the interval went from months to years. The upfront cost of the epoxy was trivial compared to the labor savings.
The comparison that makes the point most clearly is wax on a garden sign versus epoxy on a marine navigation marker. The garden sign faces sun and rain. A coat of wax every spring is plenty. The marine navigation marker faces salt spray, UV wave action, and the occasional boat bumping into it. Epoxy is the only thing that makes sense. Same principle, completely different economics.
The future of this space is interesting too. There's work on self-healing coatings that can repair small scratches automatically. There are coatings that change color when they've worn thin, giving you a visual indicator that it's time to recoat. But for now, the tried and tested materials remain the standard. Wax, silicone, spar varnish, epoxy. They've been doing this job for decades, and they're not going anywhere.
The misconception I want to kill is that any clear coat will work. It won't. Compatibility with the underlying paint marker is critical. Some coatings will destroy the mark they're meant to protect. The second misconception is that more expensive is always better. It isn't. A cheap wax that needs reapplication may be more cost-effective than an epoxy that lasts forever, but is overkill for the application. And the third is that weatherproofing is always the right next step. It isn't. For short life or low value items, the coating step adds cost and complexity without meaningful benefit.
I think the deepest insight here is that sacrificial coatings change the nature of the marking problem. Without a coating, you're solving a materials problem. How do I make a mark that survives? With a coating, you're solving a maintenance problem. How do I make a mark that's easy to maintain? The mark itself doesn't have to survive forever because the coating is absorbing the damage. You're not trying to make the mark invulnerable. You're trying to make the vulnerability predictable and cheap to address.
That's a different way of thinking about permanence. The mark isn't permanent because it never degrades. It's permanent because the degradation is managed.
Paraffin wax. A block of it, melted in a double boiler, brush it on hot. 1974.
The old timers knew something.
I worked maintenance at a municipal water treatment plant. Chlorine room. The tags on the valves and pipes, the identifiers, nothing lasted. Paint markers, engraving, even tried nail polish once. 6 weeks, maybe 2 months, and the chlorine had eaten through everything. Then I noticed the old tags from the 70s were still legible. They had this thick waxy coating over the paint. The old timers had been melting paraffin and brushing it on hot. I thought it was folk wisdom. Ignored it for a year. Then I watched a tag I'd marked with a fancy industrial paint marker fail in 6 weeks, while a wax tag from 74 was still perfectly readable. I became a convert. Still have a tin of the wax in the garage.
The wax wasn't just protecting the mark. It was telling you when to recoat.
That was the clever part. When the wax wore thin, you could see it. The surface went dull, then you'd see the paint starting to show through. That was your signal. Recoat now, before the paint underneath gets compromised. It was a built-in maintenance timer. No schedule, no calendar, no inspection checklists. You just looked at the tag and the wax told you when it was time.
That's the difference between a coating that fails visibly and one that fails invisibly. Epoxy looks fine right up until it doesn't. The damage is happening underneath, and by the time you see it, the mark is already compromised. Wax fails in a way you can read. The dullness is the warning. The paint showing through is the alarm.
The chlorine room was the worst environment in the plant. Everything corroded. Stainless steel would pit in there. The paraffin worked because it was thick enough to absorb the chemical attack, and cheap enough that nobody minded reapplying it. A block of paraffin cost a few dollars and lasted months. The labor was 5 minutes with a brush. That's the whole maintenance budget.
I'm wondering if that visible failure pattern is something the modern coatings gave up. We got harder, more durable, more chemically resistant. But we lost the ability to see when they were about to fail. A wax coating tells you it's tired. An epoxy coating just quits one day.
That's a real trade-off in the materials science. The property that makes a coating durable is often the same property that makes its failure invisible. A hard, cross-linked epoxy doesn't show wear the way a soft wax does. It maintains its appearance right up until the moment it cracks or delaminates. So you're trading predictability for durability. The wax fails sooner, but it fails loudly. The epoxy fails later, but it fails silently.
The plant supervisor used to say the paraffin was the only coating that was honest with you. Everything else lied about how well it was doing.
That's the kind of thing you only learn from watching the same tags for a decade.
You learn a lot when you're the one who has to remark the same valve every 6 weeks. You start paying attention to what actually works. The fancy stuff usually didn't. The paraffin did. That's all I've got.
There's a cutting room floor detail here that I keep thinking about. The marine spar varnish formulations were originally developed for wooden spars on sailing ships. The spar is the pole that holds the sail, and it flexes constantly under wind load. The varnish had to be flexible enough to move with the wood without cracking. That's why spar varnish is softer than spar urethane. The property that makes it good on a sailboat spar is the same property that makes it good on a flexing sign. The application hasn't changed in 200 years.
The open question I'm left with is when a mark is permanent enough. There's a point where over-engineering the marking process becomes its own liability. You spend more time and money maintaining the mark than the asset is worth. The three-step process makes sense for a valve tag in a chemical plant. It doesn't make sense for a label on a storage bin in a garage. The real skill is knowing which situation you're in.
As more infrastructure ages and more assets need long-term tracking, the economics of sacrificial coatings may shift. What happens when the coating outlasts the asset? You've got an epoxy-coated tag on a piece of equipment that's being scrapped. The tag is still perfectly readable. The asset is done. All that protection was wasted. Or was it? The tag did its job for the life of the asset. That's the definition of permanent enough.
If you enjoyed this deep dive into the material science of permanent marking, leave a review and subscribe. It helps more than you'd think. And thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping the show running.
This has been My Weird Props. We'll be back soon with another one.
Until then, keep your marks readable and your coatings honest.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Props, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from law. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.